All right, we're back. Monday, January 30th. You're listening to the Marlins Hot Stove Show, brought to you by Geico. Tonight, that's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. I'm Kyle Seeloff with you from inside the 940 Winds Miami Sports Studios this evening. Our producer this evening, Mike Lekomiak, is with us as well. And another good hour coming your way tonight. We'll be chatting shortly with newcomer and veteran big league catcher A.J. Ellis, who the Marlins signed this offseason. And as promised, after a bit of an issue last week, Todd Hollinsworth will join us this evening. Hollinsworth is the new color analyst on Fox Sports Florida this season, a former Marlin and a 2003 world champion here in Miami. He, alongside Rich Walt, certainly one of the best in the business, will join you nightly on Fox Sports Florida this season. And I can assure you, Holly joins us this evening. That's because it's a pre-recorded interview I did simply because I wanted to make sure we had him on the program. It's a great interview, so that is coming up shortly as well. So since we joined you on Monday, the Marlins made another move, a trade to be exact. Miami acquired Severino Gonzalez from the Phillies for a player to be named later or cash considerations. The acquisition rounds out the Marlins' 40-man roster, so do not expect to see any more moves made that would impact the 40-man roster. Now, as our good friend of the program, Joe Fracero, points out on Marlins.com, that doesn't mean the Marlins still won't sign some guys and give them non-roster invitee invitations, allowing them to compete for a spot on the 25-man roster during spring training. As it pertains to the trade, if you're wondering about what Gonzalez will bring to the table in 2017, a right-hander, 6 feet 2 inches tall, 155-pound Panamanian native, 24 years old. He was signed by the Phillies as an amateur free agent back in 2011. He debuted on April 28th when he was just 22 years old back in 2015 for the Phillies. He exceeded his rookie limits during the 2016 season. Good news for the Marlins, of course, with this trade. He is an arbitration eligible until 2020, and he is not a free agent until 2023. He's locked up for a long time here in Miami. Statistically speaking, he doesn't have a ton of big league time. 2016 was the most he's seen in the big leagues. Last season with Philadelphia, he was 1-2, a 5.60 ERA. He appeared in 27 games. He did not start any games. He pitched 35 and a third innings, and he had 34 strikeouts. He can bring it a little bit on the mound. Back in 2015, here's what's interesting about Severino Gonzalez. They had certainly tried out a few different roles with him back in 2015 when he debuted. He was 3-3 with a 7.92 ERA. He appeared in seven games. All seven of those games were starts. So at one point, he certainly was seen as a starting pitcher. We'll see what the future holds. He's very young. He's unpolished. He's just 24 years old. If the Marlins were to need help in the starting rotation, might he be a fit? We'll certainly have to see, and we'll have to see how things shape up during spring training. But there you have it on Severino Gonzalez, who rounds out the Marlins 40-man roster. And again, don't expect to see any more 40-man roster moves made. If the Marlins do make moves, it'll be to guys with non-roster roster invitations to spring training that will still allow them to compete for a 25-man roster spot during spring training. Okay, we'll take a quick break, but stay with us because coming up next, one of the highly regarded players in the game today, a big league veteran and now Miami Marlin, A.J. Ellis, joins us right here on your home for Marlins Baseball, 940 Winds. Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight on 940 Winds, brought to you by Geico, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. I'm your host, Kyle Seeloff, and we are just 15 days away from the start of spring training up in Jupiter. Pitchers and catchers will report on February 14th. Position players report just a few days following, and we as in the Marlins Radio Network, will join you for the first time in 2017 on February 28th. The Hall of Famer, Dave Van Horn and Glenn Gaffner, will be back behind the microphone in less than a month, so a lot to look forward to in the weeks to come. Speaking of that, make sure you mark your calendars, February 11th and 12th. Again, February 11th and 12th, next weekend, not this weekend, two weekends from now, is the Marlins' annual Fan Fest. 2 days this year, Saturday and Sunday, 12 to 4. So come on out to the ballpark and join us. It'll be a lot of fun. And any additional questions you may have on FanFest, I'll try to clear up for you at the back end of the program tonight. So hang tight. I'll make sure you've got everything you need to know for FanFest next weekend. That coming up shortly. Right now, it's out to the phone lines this evening where our first guest is standing by. He is now a Miami Marlin. He was a longtime Los Angeles Dodger before being traded to the Philadelphia Phillies last summer, a very emotional trade. He is highly regarded as one of the nicest guys in the game. Can't wait to get to know him this season. Please welcome on veteran big league catcher A.J. Ellis this evening. A.J., first, thank you for making some time for us tonight. Let's start with your offseason and your decision to join the Marlins organization. Can you take us through the process a little bit this winter and ultimately how you came to the conclusion that Miami was the best fit for not only you but for your family as well?
Yeah, absolutely. First, Kyle, thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be talking with you. I'm looking forward to getting to know you throughout the year and getting ready to know your great the great fans that the Miami Marlins have. So looking forward to being a Marlin. But, yeah, this winter, when my agents and I sat down, we started looking at teams that might be interested, a good fit for my family and myself. Miami was a team that called early, was interested from the get-go, and that's a good feeling when you have teams that are interested in you, and then a team like Miami, who's got the relationships and the connections that I was able to forge in the past when I was in Los Angeles. You know, it starts at the top with Don Mattingly, the manager I had in Los Angeles, and now with Miami, obviously. Tim Wallace, the bench coach. Lorenzo Bundy, the outfield coach. Dee Gordon, second baseman, is a great friend of mine. He's been so good to me and my family. And somebody we've always been huge fans of. So just those relationships just really made it feel like home, make it feel like it was the right place to be. And as we kind of chatted around and talked with other teams, the Marlins just kind of stayed at the front of our minds the entire process. And as it got down to it and the decision was needed to be made, it was easy for my agents and I to decide that for my family, for myself, for a chance to win, a chance to go to the playoffs, Miami was the place for us.
Hey, AJ, obviously, before we chat a lot of baseball here, there's a very human side to this game. And last summer, as a veteran of the Los Angeles Dodgers, and you ultimately ended up in Philadelphia to end the 2016 season, it was very emotional for you. And it's a side of the game I don't think people understand that much. So how hard is it when you make a decision in the offseason to know that you're going to be away from your family? And obviously, Miami isn't the closest of places to home for you. How difficult was that?
Yeah, you know, geographically, it was kind of, another challenging situation for my family and I. I've been blessed to have three kids, 8, 6, and 4 years old, and we live in Milwaukee in the off season, so they stay back here, go to school in Milwaukee, and try to link up with me in the summer. But they try to sneak down for as many weekends as they can. Los Angeles made that very challenging, and as we looked around for teams this off season, see what the interest was. We did keep geography in mind. But when it came down to it, my wife's the MVP of my family for sure. And, she kept saying, if Miami's the right fit for us, it's the right fit. We'll figure out the geography and finding ways to stay connected the best we can. We did it in L.A. for 13 seasons. We can do it in Miami coming into this next year. So that is the unknown, the side that maybe fans don't get to see quite so much is that human side. We all have family lives. We all have things going home. Going on at home with our families, our children, the logistics of travel, being traded last summer, in less than 24 hours after traded, I was on a plane in New York to meet the Phillies as they were getting ready to play the Mets. And there, my wife and my three kids were left in Los Angeles to pick up the pieces, of my 6 major league seasons in Los Angeles, closing up a house, getting a rental car back to a dealership, finding out plane flights. So that human side sometimes gets lost in the shuffle when, kind of tend to look at the spotlight of being on the field.
I can imagine. As it pertains to you coming to Miami, AJ, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you alluded to it a little bit. How important was it to have familiarity with Tim Wallach, Don Mattingly, Dee Gordon? How big of a decision and how much of a factor did that play into your decision?
Well, it was absolutely the separator. Just the relationships I formed with those guys. I had Donnie first for 3 years as a hitting coach in Los Angeles, and then he transitioned to become my manager there my last 5 years there. Tim Wallach was a guy who was taught me so much about the game of baseball. First as a AAA manager I had in Albuquerque with our AAA affiliate there. Had him for 2 seasons in there, and then he transitioned to the major league staff as a third base coach originally, and then to the bench coach. And then finally Lorenzo Bundy, a guy who I got to play for first way back in 2008 in Las Vegas, the AAA team there. and then later in Albuquerque when he came back to the organization, and then he went up to the Major League staff as well. So three great men, three great baseball men, people I've got to know well, know their families well. They know my family extremely well. That familiarity was like I said, the huge separator. Knowing what I'm going to be walking into, the expectations that they have for me, what my role is on the team, it's the conversations and those expectations are laid out very easily. And I know what my mission is coming to the Marlins, and I know what I'm there to do. I know who I'm there to work for, and we all have the common goal. We had unfinished business in Los Angeles all together. We knocked on the door quite a few times together trying to win that championship. And I'm excited to take another run with these same guys here in Miami.
Before I ask you what you see out of this current ball club, and obviously, again, a factor playing into your decision was the ability for these guys to win, and certainly you guys hope to play deep into October this season. You played a lot of years in Los Angeles, and not many of us here on the East Coast could stay up for those late nights and watch A.J. Ellis play baseball. So for fans wondering what we're getting out of A.J. Ellis this season, could you describe for us the type of player you are and what we can expect?
Well, you know, the greatest compliment I ever received in my playing career, was from my Double A manager. At the end of the season, we fought, we made it to the playoffs in Double A a long time ago, back in 2006, 2007. He pulled me in the office and said, AJ, I'm going to tell you something about you that I don't know if you know or not, but there's a way we describe baseball players in meetings behind closed doors. And the way that I will describe you now and forever is you're a winning ball player. To me, that was the ultimate compliment. That's my goal as a player. I want to be known as a winning ball player. May not look the prettiest, may not have the greatest stat line, but at the end of the day, I'm there to help my team win a game. I'm there to help my pitcher get through tough spots. I'm there to make the right decisions behind the plate, call the right pitches, maintain the pace of the game, know when the pitcher needs a break and needs to go out there, communicate with him throughout the course of the game. I've said multiple times, I'll take an 0-for-4 and 4 strikeouts at the plate as long as it means I'm shaking hands at the end of the game with my teammates behind the pitcher's mound because we've won the game. Because you play this game so long, and you're not that Hall of Fame type, all-star type player, what matters to you is winning and winning games and winning, the opportunity to win a championship. And so definitely at this stage in my career, as it's been my entire career, that's what drives me. So to be known as a winning ball player, a guy a manager can trust and help his team win, that's what's most important to me.
One of the newest Marlins, A.J. Ellis, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this season. Okay, A.J., let's chat about this current Marlins ball club and the one that you'll be stepping into this clubhouse to meet these guys. Let's get your perspective. It's unique. You've seen this ball club for many years now. I'm sure it was a factor in your decision and the ability to win, but I'll open it up for you a little bit here. What do you see out of this ball club? You've seen them for quite some years now and some of the youth that's here.
Yeah, this team is ready. This team's ready, knocking on the door. It's right there. Right there at their doorstep. It's the talent amongst the position players is as good as anywhere in baseball. You're starting to see these guys straight take strides. The whole lineup, top to bottom, the depth that there is there, the quality of player, the athleticism is off the charts. Starting with D at the top of the lineup. Watching Christian Yelich make strides as a hitter and becoming that all-star caliber hitter that you saw as a rookie and seeing him put it all together is scary, and as a catcher, I'm excited to be on this team and not have to figure out a way to get him out because the strides he's made as a hitter. And then you get Big G up there and say keep him healthy all year long. The threat that he is, another guy from being on the other side, just the presence he has, even when if he's not feeling great swinging a bat, just knowing that if you make one mistake, the game changes with his power and his foul line power that can just change a game with one swing. So the lineup is deep, and then most importantly for me and what I'm stepping into, to be able to work with a catcher like JT Realmuto.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to get to know him, get to work with him. Been a fan of his, like you said, from across the coast. Last year when I got to Philly, I got a chance to kind of chat with him a little bit around the batting cage, see what a great man he is. Talk about Tim Wallach and Donnie about his growth and what they see in him. And, from early on, even last spring training, text messaging with Tim, telling me he's an all-star caliber catcher and going to grow into that role. So I'm excited to get with JT, kind of be there for him in any way he needs. Somebody who can, help him with anything he needs, mentally, physically, any tricks I can show him from my years of experience and just kind of partner with him and mainly watch him go out there and take over the leadership role on this team and become that all-star caliber catcher that he is.
AJ, you're going to report to Jupiter on February 14th, and you're going to inherit a staff that you've never worked with before. I guess maybe you worked with Severino Gonzalez at the end of last season, but regardless, 99% of this roster is going to be new and unfamiliar territory from a catching perspective to a pitching perspective for you. So can you take us through the grueling spring that it'll be and the amount of homework that you're going to have to do to build relationships with this staff in the bullpen?
Yeah, he used the word grueling. I'm actually excited about it. I think it's great. It's what baseball is based on. It's what spring training is all about. Even when you're somewhere that you've been for years, there's always going to be turnover. There's always going to be new guys coming in. I can still remember the day Zach Greinke walked into that Dodger clubhouse, and the excitement I had to get to spend the spring training, getting to work with him as we grew our relationship into the season. And I'm looking forward to working with Tom Kohler and Jeff Locke and Dustin McGowan and you know, name after name of guys, you know, that I'm going to spend time getting to know, getting to build that relationship with, see what makes them work, sit down with them in front of a computer, look at video, and just start that dialogue. And then most importantly, get out there on the bullpen mound, get out there in the spring training games, and just build that rapport, build that relationship, and get feedback both ways. And it's something that I relish. It's one of my favorite parts of the job, is that pitcher-catcher relationship, because I know what a difference it can make building a championship caliber team. You know, the pitching dynamic is what separates most teams. The teams that can throw strikes, command the strike zone, the teams that can dial it up and get a big strikeout with a runner on third base and one out. Those are the teams that change momentum and win a lot of games.
Is that relationship building what's most important to you during spring training, AJ?
Well, absolutely. The relationship I'm going to try to build with the pitching staff, relationship I'm going to build with JT, that's what I'm going to be my focus as we get to Jupiter, is to work with these guys, spend time with them, get feedback both ways, kind of talk to them from a hitter's perspective. These are guys I've faced before as an opposing hitter. Hey, this is what I look for when I'm facing you. This is what I know if I get you in this count, your tendency to do this. I know if I want to try to hit a ball on the pull side, I got to try to do this. Things like that, just try to little things that we picked up over the years facing against a team like Miami, and try to close some of those windows, close some of those gaps, and make the process a lot smoother and make the games flow a lot better for us.
Just a couple more questions on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight from one of the newest Marlins and the catcher here in Miami this season, AJ Ellis. It'll be AJ and JT Realmuto with the catching duties in Miami at Marlins Park this season for 162 games. AJ, just a couple more questions for you. You've been in the league since 2008, and I know this question can go a little bit deeper, but what's the thing you've really learned about yourself in Major League Baseball and what it takes to succeed at this level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's consistency. It's not just consistency of play. It's consistency of work ethic, discipline, the way you carry yourself, consistency of character, the way you go about your business on a day in, day out basis. And fortunate for me, I've gotten to learn from so many great veteran players over the years. I've gotten to learn from guys like Michael Young, Skip Schumacher, Nick Punto, a guy who's familiar to Marlins fans, Juan Pierre. Mm-hmm. These are guys who I've gotten to learn from, the way that they went about their business, that they went about things. And then a guy that, my closest friend in baseball, Clayton Kershaw, everybody wants to talk about how great he is and how hard he works, which is all true, but what separates Clayton is how consistent he works. The guy does not skip. The guy does not miss a day. He is as consistent and diligent of workers I've ever seen. And that's hopefully rubbed off me to some degree. Hopefully that's something that I can impart on players that I play with now and in the future, just what it takes to succeed and stick around this game. Because one thing I learned from an early age, too, coming up in the minor leagues, was as extremely difficult it is to make the major leagues, it's even harder to stay in the major leagues. And it's that discipline and that consistency is what separates most players.
AJ, on the way out the door here, strictly from a catching perspective, how different will you call a game inside the spacious, you could say, Marlins Park this season, as opposed when you go to a place like Philadelphia?
Yeah, no doubt. Using the field to your advantage, it's always using those conditions. Trying to put a ball on the ground when you're in a place like up in Philadelphia or in Coors Field, working the bottom of the strike zone more, maybe using a little more changeup in certain counts than you would maybe breaking ball. The tendency for that pitch to stay up in the air and be more of an elevated pitch. So when you're in Marlins Park, you want to use the opposite opposite field to your advantage. You want to make guys beat you in the air the other way. Not too many players can really do that anymore. Fortunately, there's a couple guys on the Marlins team that can do it for us. But for the majority of the league, most of the damage comes on that pole side. So making guys use the big part of the field, staying in advantage counts, putting guys on the defensive when you're in a big park, when you're in any park mainly, though, you want to keep the count in your advantage. So getting strike one on everybody you can, taking advantage, avoiding 2-0, 3-1 counts, avoiding putting three base runners on base. These are all things that kind of play into the formula. Using Marlins Park to our advantage will definitely be something that's talked about and we're aware of as we get into the season.
AJ, it has been an absolute pleasure, man. We can't thank you enough for the time tonight. Enjoy the last few weeks of your off season, and we will see you in Jupiter in just a couple of weeks. Thanks so much.
Okay, yeah, thanks, Kyle. Look forward to seeing you guys.
Well, it's going to be a lot of fun. A terrific interview. And again, thank you to AJ Ellis this evening, a 9-year big league veteran, 555 games under his belt, 1,957 approaching 2,000 plate appearances, a career batting average of .239. In a lot of ways, he's very, very similar to a guy we've seen in recent years in Jeff Mathis, an all-around unbelievable human being inside the clubhouse, outside of the clubhouse, on the field, in the dugout. AJ now 35 years old, 6 feet 2 inches tall, 225 pounds, a Missouri native, went to high school in Lexington, Kentucky, went to school at Austin Peay State University in Clarksville, Tennessee, drafted by the Dodgers in the 18th round back in 2003, and he debuted on September 15th of 2008. And again, everybody speaks so highly about AJ, and it says a lot when your best friend in the game is Clayton Kershaw. And AJ, for the most part, was Clayton's personal catcher, so you can certainly hang your hat on that. Again, a wonderful interview, and again, we thank AJ Ellis for the time this evening. Coming up next, stick with us, Todd Hollinsworth. I promise, I really do. He's coming up next on the other side of the break, right here on your home for Marlins baseball, 940 WINS. All right, folks, welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight on 940 WINS. As always, it's brought to you by GEICO. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. A great first half of the program tonight and a wonderful interview. And again, we thank the time for AJ Ellis for joining us, one of the newest Marlins. He's going to back up JT Realmuto this season. And AJ mentioned it in our interview. He cannot wait to start working with JT. Tim Wallach says that JT's an all-star catcher, and certainly it's a tough to deny that. He's awesome behind the plate, and it'll be really, really fun to watch JT and AJ Ellis work together this season. We talk about it a lot, and AJ just kind of, he gives off that vibe of, he's just an awesome guy. And, when you talk about winning a World Series, and you'll hear it here in just a minute, I asked Todd Hollinsworth when he was in this Chicago Cubs clubhouse what it takes to win a World Series. And it takes so much more than just talent. You need 25 guys collectively all in it together with one common goal and one vision. Obviously, you got to stay healthy on the field, but you got to surround yourself with awesome guys. And AJ Ellis certainly seems like one of those guys, and he'll bend over backwards, and he will do anything it takes to win here in Miami this season. Okay, I know it was an issue last week, not this week, I promise. I know Todd Hollinsworth is joining us. That's because late last week, I gave Holly a call on the phone. I said, we're going to make sure we've got this for Monday night. We do. Let's kick it now to our interview with the newest color analyst on Fox Sports Florida. He'll sit alongside one of the best, Rich Waltz, this season. This is Todd Hollinsworth on the Marlon Tatso Show this evening. All right, folks, chatting this evening, the long-awaited and anticipated debut of the newest Fox Sports Florida analyst, all 162 games on your television. This upcoming season, a former Marlin, a World Series champion, most recently part of the Chicago Cubs teleclast. Please welcome Mr. Todd Hollinsworth to the program. Todd, first and foremost, thank you so much for the time. We're extremely excited to have you down here in South Florida this season. And I guess, welcome home, right? This has got to be really exciting for you and the family.
Absolutely. Very, very excited to be back in South Florida. It was a very, very memorable 1 year that we were there in 2003. And as Marcy and I, my wife and my four children had said, we couldn't have been more excited to get this opportunity to be back with the Marlins, to be back with Fox in South Florida. Very, very excited to be part of this franchise and a very, very, I'll even say a little bit under the radar, exciting team in the National League.
Well, before we chat a lot of baseball, I'm going to go a lot of different directions with you. Let's start with this job in particular. Share with us as much as you're willing to how this kind of came about. Obviously, you were doing a lot of work for the Chicago Cubs, but how did this opportunity come about for you?
Well, you know, in this industry, it's a great question. I told many people kind of getting into the booth, which has always kind of been a goal of mine. Now, I've been doing this for about almost a decade since I retired in 06, and have been obviously here with the Chicago Cubs in Chicago, raising my family here. My wife is from the area, and so home became Chicago. My kids growing up here, part of the Cubs organization, doing, you know, pre and post game, and then working in MLB Network Radio has been just a true blessing for me. It's helped me polish my skills in broadcasting and radio and TV, and it's a lot of legwork, and I kind of appreciated the effort behind it, but I'd always wanted to be in the booth. I wanted the ability to call the game, to be close to the game, to be in the game every day, and I've just been waiting for my opportunity. And the thing that's so interesting about it is I tell my wife all the time, it was easier getting to the big leagues, it seems. 880 jobs at the big league level, right? So there's more jobs. There's only 30 of these jobs, so I have just kind of been waiting my time and putting my name in and hoping that one of my former teams would pop open, a spot would pop open, and that I would be able to maybe jump in and land that opportunity. And the opportunity presented itself with the Marlins. I couldn't be happier. I'm very, very excited. In fact, we are in the process of moving to South Florida. This is not, you know, I'm coming to, you know, be part of the Marlins for you know, the season, right? And then, you know, running back home. Home is going to be South Florida for us. We are going to become Floridians and South Floridians, and we're very, very excited to do that, getting the kids in school and everything else that goes along with that.
So let me start right there then. I'm sure a lot of people see this. Wow, this is an incredible opportunity, and it is. It's an absolutely wonderful job, but a portion of it that a lot of people probably don't think about is you have a wonderful family, and that must have been a very, very big decision, and I'm sure you had to get the kids and the wife's blessing to make this huge move and this life-changing decision.
Well, it is, you know, but it's back into the baseball world. It's a world that my wife knows very, very well. And
right.
To your point, you know, when I'm doing MLB Network Radio and working with SiriusXM, you know, we're talking baseball. We're doing the winter meetings. We do it year round. But again, the you know, I'm not, you know, I don't have to travel. I'm not, you know, I'm at home and I'm able to work out of my office and do things that way. You know, pre and post games, they're very, very important. Certainly a big part of the broadcast. But, you know, done differently, you know, the obligation, you still typically don't have to travel. Most pre and post game guys like myself, even here in Chicago and most other markets, you know, don't always have to travel with the team. So really that's the one part of the equation that I have not had to deal with again. So you're absolutely right. And Mars, my wife and my kids they're very, very excited for the opportunity. They know how this is going to go, but it's all in and all out. It's the way it works
right
now. So, you know, it's Sunday to Sunday for 6 months out of the year, just like a baseball player would do, just like that life. And then you do get your time off in the off season, but then it's right back to work again.
I think you alluded to it a little bit just a couple of minutes ago, but it seems to me that you might have had a passion for broadcasting and found it very intriguing even during your playing days that ended back in 06.
I did. Oh, most definitely. I mean, you know, when I retired, and I think that, you know, this has been talked about, I've noticed it has, and certainly have been asked about this an awful lot. Through my years since I've retired, you know, what do baseball players do with their life after the game of baseball? Most of us have dedicated our lives in, you know, just about every way we can imagine to this sport in the hope of being in the big leagues and playing and building a career and making some money and winning a World Series and doing all the things that are on your baseball bucket list. And if you're lucky enough to even get that cup of coffee at the major league level, you know, you realize there's still life after baseball. We're not golfers. You know, you don't get to go to the senior tour and play through your 60s and 70s and, you know, hang it up whenever you're good and ready. I mean, this is a bit of a vicious sport, much like football, much like basketball. It's got a shelf life, and you're going to have to get through it. And then you're going to have to realize, I don't care how much money you make, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? And, again, I maintained that, you know, even through this, I knew that I was qualified to do baseball. So I began to polish my skills. I actually asked around. In fact, talked to Michael Hill. He probably doesn't even remember this, but talked to him about 10 years ago just to give me a behind-the-scenes look of what being, you know, being in the front office was all about as I tried to find my place in this world post my baseball career. The broadcast side of things worked out. The call came here in Chicago. I've been here polishing those skills and getting better, and I've done it in a pretty big market, so I'm really, really excited to come down to Florida and be, you know, just a bigger part of the Miami Marlins broadcast.
Todd Hollinsworth joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. You mentioned the world of broadcasting and broadcasting baseball can be, do you believe, a little bit more difficult than even making it to the big leagues. From the side of broadcasting itself, how difficult have you found it to be in a side of the game that people love? And if you're very, very good at it, it's incredible to listen to somebody. How difficult has it been for you?
Well, it hasn't been terribly difficult because I love baseball in general, and I love the players, and I love the game, and I think that's it. I think sometimes, you know, what ends up happening, what can happen to individuals is that, you know, in a lot of ways always comes back to our own life's experiences. And for me personally, I had so many ups and downs and so many great things happen to me, and obviously some difficult roads that I had to go through, including one with the Marlins. And, you know, I signed on with the Marlins in 03 to be a starter, lost my job, and had to become a great reserve. I mean, that was what my calling was that year, if you will. You know, understanding the game and understanding how it works and just how difficult it is to be great at this game day in and day out is something that I just had such an appreciation for my 12 years in the game and understanding that. But the ability to relate to the players today as they go through this. I mean, you almost look at the offense in the game today. It's amazing. You know, you have so many players. You see it now. Power is big. It's all of a sudden it's back. Everybody's doing it. But then, you know, what's being coveted? Well, you know, maybe the five tool players are a little bit harder to find right now. I mean, it's just so amazing to me. And, you know, transitioning that into a broadcast is not hard for me to do. I love talking the game of baseball. In fact, most people tell me to shut up. I usually get honestly tired of me talking. It's what ends up happening. I get so excited and so passionate that, you know, just about talking about the game and how the game's growing and evolving and becoming what it's becoming. I'm very proud of the work that I've done behind the scenes. And I will say this, the work over at MLB Network Radio has been an incredible blessing because my responsibility has been 30 teams for the last 6 years. Understanding organizations inside and out is never an easy thing to do. 30 teams, I mean, it's taken so much work from behind the scenes, but I've got this knowledge in my head of, you know, kind of how teams work and how these general managers like to operate and think. In fact, my partner at MLB Network Radio was a former general manager. So just so much of this game I love, and, you know, it kind of comes out in who I am. And like I said, I'm sure Rich is going to give me a few elbows during the course of the year. It said, it's time to be quiet now.
Well, you're going to have an absolutely terrific broadcast partner this season in Rich Welts, who is just simply one of the best in the game. Hey, Todd, before we chat about this current Marlins team, it'd be wrong of me if I didn't ask, obviously, some of your memories from that 03 World Championship team. And one of your former teammates, now a first ballot Hall of Famer, in Pudge Rodriguez.
Oh, so proud for Pudge. I'm so excited for him. And, you know, here's the thing. I got to play with Pudge in Texas as well,
right,
and obviously with the Marlins. You know, just he's just such a great teammate. And that year was just such an interesting year, I think, for so many of us. I mean, there's so many stories that I'm sure you've heard throughout the years of how the story is told of what we became at the end of what we were at the beginning. And I think for many of us, including Pudge, he would tell you. I mean, there were things going on at the beginning that, you know, there was some frustration. There was, you know, we weren't getting it done. We cost the manager his job. I mean, there were a lot of things that I think we put on ourselves and just really weren't coming through to what we became at the end. It's really an amazing story. And I even think for Pudge, the journey that his career has been, you know, probably would tell you some of that. You know, at first was just a dominant defensive force in the game. And I don't think anybody is obviously ever going to deny him that, all the gold gloves that he won and how great he was behind the plate, but how his offensive skills started to become a big part of what his game was as his career progressed. It wasn't that way at the beginning. It was that way at the end, and certainly was a big offensive force for us in Miami. The one thing I always remind Marlins fans is, I don't know if people realize this, Pudge caught like every day,
right,
like the last 3 months of the season, like literally every day. I mean, that's like unheard of. You don't realize the responsibility that he was shouldering, you know, taking in the staff. We were picking up guys along the way. We were picking up anybody. Larry Beinfest and the crew were trying to get guys in that could help us in the bullpen. I mean, he was just handling everything, just absolutely incredible. And I just, when I think of us as a team and us as a whole, what we were in April and May to what we were, you know, when this thing finally wrapped itself up late October and November, wow, how we changed.
Yeah, the newest member of the Fox Sports Florida broadcast team, Todd Hollinsworth, a former Marlin, a World Series champion, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show. Oh, okay, Todd, let's chat about this Marlins team heading into 2017. Obviously, unforeseen circumstances at the end of the 2016 season with the passing of Jose Fernandez. This is very, very open-ended. Obviously, the Marlins are trying to rebuild the starting rotation. I think they've done a very, very nice job in that regard. Let me just open this up for you. What do you see out of this ball club, whether it's offensively, defensively, the pitching staff, the bullpen? What do you see heading into 2017?
I see a really good team. I mean, this is a team that was 79-82 last year, and, you know, in some ways floats a little bit below the radar, which is typical because of, you know, the division that they're in and the teams that they've also got in that division. You got a team from New York that everybody always wants to talk about. You've got, you know, the Washington Nationals are certainly improving, and it's going to be a tough division, but I like this Marlins team. Here's why. They've got so many bits of evidence that show you of what they can be, and it almost feels to me that it's the conversation of confidence. Remember I talked about us in 03, how we were a different team in April and May than where we were maybe at the end of the year, and how our confidence, and we really started to believe in who we were and what our identity was going to be. Once this team realizes its identity and how good they really can be, the sky's the limit. I mean, there's so many things. I mean, I look at this bullpen, the acquisitions that they've been, you know, bringing in Ziegler, bringing in Tozawa. I mean, this is going to be a deep bullpen. The rotation, obviously you've got to absorb the passing of Jose Fernandez. That's never going to be easy. But, I mean, there's just so much evidence everywhere you look. Like, take, for example, the offense. This is a team that was second in the National League in batting average. What does that tell you? These guys know how to hit. They know how to put the ball in play. They know how to create offense. They can hit good. They can hit, you know, some of the lower guys in the rotation. They can score some runs. But the problem that you have is that it didn't translate as well as you would think it would. I mean, for a team that was second in the National League in batting average, 13th in runs scored and 14th in home runs, that doesn't add up. See, so there's something there. And in a lot of what that is, it's confidence. It's just believing that when you're putting guys in position to score runs, that you're going to score runs and that you're going to come through in those situations. So there is so much evidence, I think, right there on the top of the surface, whether it's in depth in the bullpen, whether it's in innings eaters in the rotation, that tell you that this team can absolutely compete with just about anybody in the National League. And if a few things go their way, they could be really, really good. But for me, you know, it is a little cliche, and I certainly don't want to throw it out, you know, already. But, it, you know, you look at the team and think, if they get off to a good start and that confidence starts to blossom
right
early, it could be a real, real exciting year. Everybody says that. Everybody always. That's a message. Managers say it to you the first day. Just get off to a great start. It's what we want to do. Everybody says it, but I look at this group and I think, you know, it's a really extra special dose of this. If they get, you know, have a fantastic April and they realize how good they can be, I think it could be a special year.
Well, look, position player-wise, too, there was about five or six of these guys that were 23, you know, within the last couple of years, and they kept saying, well, you know, we're young. But now that, you know, these guys are 25, 26 now, they've got 3 or 4 years of big league experience under their belt. Hey, let me ask you, Todd, the way the bullpen's going to complement the starting rotation, and obviously you see a lot of bullies around the league now throwing 98 and going out there and giving a manager 7 1/3 innings. Michael Hill and his staff have assembled the starting five, which if they give you 6 really, really strong innings and he hands it off to the bullpen for 3 innings, that would be terrific. He's also assembled the bullpen in which a starter could go 5 innings and the bullpen could carry it the rest of the way and take that load. Obviously, that's not easy to do over the course of 162 games. How do you think that's going to play out? That's a lot of work for a bullpen.
It is a lot of work for a bullpen, and it's going to be some give and take. I mean, there's obviously going to be, you know, the opportunity to do that. And I think when you build a bullpen that's got depth like the Marlins have, you can get away with that a little bit more than most. But again, let's remember, good teams find different ways to win. I firmly believe that. The team that we were in 03, we did not have one script that we had to follow. I mean, there's always a way. Teams have an identity, you know, when it comes to their winning and how they like to win, whether it's power on offense, whether it's speed on offense, whether it's their starting pitching, or maybe it's a little bit more of the bullpen. That could easily be the case for the Marlins this year. In fact, if this is a successful season, which I believe it's going to be, the bullpen is going to be a huge part of that. But the other parts of this team are going to have to be big at certain points. And that's really what it comes down to. It's never targeting, you know, the one area of your team that you believe has to be great all season long, because it's just never the case. It never goes that way. You know, whether you're looking at the Mets or, you're looking at the Cubs, or, you know, you can talk about certain aspects of their team, they're going to have bumps along the way. And those other phases of your team have to be just as consistent. So I love what they're doing. They can do that, to answer your question, absolutely, for a large chunk of the season. But there's going to probably be at least a 40-game stretch in there where that can't be the case.
Right.
Maybe it's the offense being a little bit better through that stretch and scoring more runs or being more highly consistent, you know, maybe averaging through that stretch 5.5 runs a ball game. Or it's the starting rotation gets into a great rhythm and everybody's pumping out 6 and 7 innings to start and taking a lot of that burden off the bullpen. You probably are not going to be able to ride it start to finish and think it's going to work out without bringing in reinforcements. But I will say this, it's a great start, man. I'll tell you, bullpens define teams, and they can, I've said it for years on radio all the time, and people start to understand what I'm talking about. Bullpens are so responsible for the emotional energy in a clubhouse, mm-hmm. because if those wins and those leads late in ball games don't stay leads and turn into wins, it will absolutely devastate a clubhouse. And when they are, you're just doing your job. I mean, that's it. That's the unfortunate part of being a bullpen guy. You're only responsible for the good, because when the bad happens, you're either out the door or the season is lost.
I think you can provide some interesting insight on the following front, Todd. You were a member of a world championship team yourself in 2003, and most recently this past season, the Cubs end their drought, and you had an opportunity to be in that clubhouse around that group of guys. What does it take to win a World Series? Obviously, you have to have talent, and if you put 25 guys that are the caliber of Babe Ruth out there, it's going to go a long way. But from what I saw from the outside, the Chicago Cubs had a ton of fun. They were very, very talented. What does it take to get there? It goes so much past those nine innings every night, doesn't it?
It's a belief. It's absolutely a belief. It's exactly what we were in 2003. It's exactly what this 2016 Cubs team was that I witnessed every day. Great group of guys, good group of kids. Young, just like the Marlins, easily as young, so many young players, young and talented. Good rotation. Obviously, the pitching is what probably gets talked about the most. They had great starting pitching, good bullpen. But the belief that they belonged. I mean, I take back what Joe Maddon did in 2015. Moment about halfway through that season, the Cardinals and the Cubs are kind of getting on each other's nerves just a little bit. Things were getting really, really testy. And I'll never forget the post-game press conference. Joe, you know, basically kind of, I don't want to say called out the Cubs players, but basically just put them on point. If we're going to be a World Series team, we're going to stop basically being afraid of the Cardinals. That's just it. We're going to go in there. We're going to play our game. We're going to play our brand of baseball and realize that we're on the same, you know, field that they're on and that we belong. And he talked about those steps. That's that exact confidence I'm talking about with this Marlins group. When they believe and they know they belong on any field with anybody, they're going to realize how talented they are, and they're going to win a lot more than they're going to lose. And that's when you really start to understand that you're a great team, that you've got a chance to win. You're absolutely right about the talent. The talent is so important. But hasn't a World Series winner over the last 10 to 15 years proven to us that you don't have to have the most talented team in baseball? Sometimes it can be a Madison Bumgarner, you know, heroic moment. I mean, it can be all sorts of different individuals in different ways that can turn a team into a championship winner. And I look at this Marlins team and think they've got enough guys, I mean, to get this thing done. I really do believe if their confidence starts to blossom and they start to play well, that they could easily be one of the top five teams in the National League.
Todd, on the way out the doors here, and again, it's such a young club here in Miami, and it's a great group of guys, and they're so fun to watch. Are there a couple in particular that stick out to you, whether it'll be the opportunity to be around Giancarlo Stanton every day and get to know him on a more personal level, a guy like Yelich, Ozuna, D. Gordon? Is there anybody in particular that you're like, wow, I can't wait to obviously get to know that guy on a more intimate and personal level and watch him play every day?
Oh, I love this group, I'm telling you. I mean, there's so many, you know, I connect with so many of these guys in a lot of ways, even through my own career. You know, not because I'm Giancarlo Stanton, just because, like, Giancarlo Stanton, well, let me, you'll understand my point. Giancarlo's dealt with some injuries. I dealt with injuries. Right. You know, like, the big thing for Stanton this year is staying on the field. I love Yelich. I think Yelich is going to be an incredible baseball player for years to come. Mm-hmm. He's got a sweet swing. He's got the right personality, almost even the right demeanor, you know, for a baseball player. I'll tell you one other one that's probably might surprise you a little bit. Real Muto behind the plate. This kid has been big time last year. Many of us on the national level took notice of JT in the year that he put together. I love AJ Ellis, that he is now on board. That relationship is going to be phenomenal. If anybody can weave this kind of, we've got to kind of find our way through the rotation in the bullpen and get our kind of our mojo and our rhythm going. AJL, I'm not sure you guys could have found a better, you know, compliment to Real Muto than Ellis. He is a heck of a baseball player. Probably going to be a manager one day. He's kind of like David Ross version two, I guess, maybe.
Or Jeff Mathis, who we just had, right?
What's that?
Or Jeff Mathis, who we just had. Very similar.
Very much, yeah, or a Jeff Mathis, very, very much like that. I totally agree. So Don Mattingly, obviously, in Ellis, they certainly go back. I get it. I certainly get the relationship. I just think there's so much there. And Real Muto, to me, is the one who I really think that the ceiling, because of the position that he plays and how he grew last year with the potential to do even more of that this year. Like, for me, Yelich, we all know he's a great ball player. He may put up better numbers. Stanton stays healthy. He may hit 50 home runs, but I don't think that necessarily surprises us in any way. But I really do believe with Realmuto that there's the possibility for greatness, and he can really take it to the upper echelon level, like that Buster Posey level. Yeah. And he's already close as it is. So I'm really excited to see what he might be able to do this year.
Todd Hollinsworth, first and foremost, thank you so much for the time. You've been incredibly generous and gracious with your time. Again, welcome back home to South Florida. We cannot wait to get going in spring training in Jupiter and obviously the start of the 2017 season. Again, thank you so much for the time, Todd, and safe travels moving you and the family down here soon.
Thanks so much, Kyle. Absolutely a blast to join you. Look forward to it. And, yeah, get through these tough times here, and we'll be down there real soon.
Awesome to hear from Todd Hollinsworth this evening, a big league veteran, a former Marlin, a 2003 World Series champion. I'm sure we'll have an opportunity once or twice, a couple of times this season, to sit down with Holly and pick his brain a little bit about that 03 World Championship team and obviously get his insight on what's going on throughout the course of the regular season. And certainly through a 20-minute interview like that, just a brilliant baseball guy, so it'll be a lot of fun to talk to him this season. When we come back, we'll wrap up tonight's program right here on your home for Marlins Baseball, 940 Wins. Welcome back to Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, as always brought to you by Geico. That's where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on your car insurance. As we wrap things up this evening, a very big thank you to A.J. Ellis and Todd Hollinsworth. A fun show tonight, and pitchers and catchers report in just 15 days. Pitchers and catchers will report on February 14th. Position players report a few days after. We, the Marlins Radio Network, will be on air with you for the first time on February 28th. The Hall of Famer Dave Van Horn and our very own Glenn Geffner will rejoin you from Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter this spring, where I should mention there's going to be a lot of new amenities at Roger Dean Stadium. I know it can get pretty toasty up there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon during spring training, and a lot of the seating areas are now going to be covered. You're going to be in the shade, so that'll be a lot of fun. So make sure you come see us. I know you can purchase your spring training tickets now. Speaking of tickets, when you can purchase things, make sure you join us February 11th and the 12th, not this weekend, the following weekend, at Marlins Park. It's going to be the Marlins annual Fan Fest this year, brought to you by Papa John's. It has expanded to 2 days, 12 to 4 each day, Saturday and Sunday, February 11th and 12th, 12 to 4, at Marlins Park, inside, outside the ballpark. Autograph sessions, Marlins players and alumni. There's going to be a kids' home run derby. This is free, and it's open to the public, so come hang out. Photo opportunities with the World Series trophies, live music and entertainment with local bands, sports cards, a memorabilia show. There's going to be interactive games and baseball exhibits, including the world's largest baseball. Single-game tickets also go on sale on February 11th. Again, single-game tickets go on sale if you want to get on the action this season. And you can also, at the ballpark, February 11th and 12th, you can learn how to guarantee yourself access to the All-Star Game tickets in 2017, that is this season. There's a very, very limited amount of ways you can do that if you do want to take part in the All-Star Game festivities. And being a Marlins season ticket holder, you're going to have an upper leg on a lot of people. So make sure you get in on all the fun. Again, that's February 11th and 12th, not this weekend. Next weekend, 12 to 4 at the ballpark. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. I'll let you know about what we're doing next week. We might have a best of show for you. And the reason I say that is because I know for a fact we'll be on the air for an hour on February 10th. Glenn Geffner and I will be with you from Marlins Park on February 12th from 10 to 12, or 12 to 2. And then Monday, February 13th, we will rejoin you from the Jack McKeon Celebrity Golf Classic from 10 to 12 at Crandon Park at Key Biscayne. So we are going to be on the air a lot over the course of these next couple of weeks. In some capacity, we'll be on air with you next Monday. Might have a new guest for you. Might be a best of show. But a lot coming your way over the course of the next couple of weeks. As always, on behalf of Mike Lekomiak, our producer this evening, who did a terrific job, I'm Kyle Seeloff saying thank you for listening tonight. And we'll be back with you next Monday, right here on your home for Marlins Baseball, 940 Wins.